Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take that carefully curated stack of sources you've shared with us and really just distill the most important, insightful nuggets of knowledge. For today's Deep Dive, we are wading into the vast cosmic ocean of Marvel. And let's be real with ourselves. You're probably feeling some Marvel fatigue right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Every piece of content, you know, whether it's a show, a movie, or a major game, it feels structurally tied to the next big screen phase.
Right. It's always Thanos or Kang or...
Or a multiverse collapse that somehow loops back to an inevitable crossover. Hmm. I mean, it's a huge, interconnected, sometimes overwhelming commitment.
It really is.
And that is precisely why the source material we have today is so compelling.
Oh.
We are looking at a highly detailed review of a brand new game, Marvel Cosmic Invasion, which... manages to take a radically different path, a path that lets it feel genuinely fresh. Okay, so let's unpack this. Our mission here is to extract the surprising knowledge about how a game can succeed wildly by ignoring current cinematic trends, leveraging incredibly deep comic book lore, and introducing some genuinely innovative mechanics into a genre that hasn't seen this kind of innovation in years.
And the source material, it's a fantastic guide. It really validates this whole approach. I mean, this isn't just a surface level impression. The review is a thorough breakdown, and it awards the game a highly respected 8.5 out of 10.
That's a strong score.
It is. And what's fascinating here is how the reviewer praises the game specifically for being a pretentious, free, polished, and purely fun experience. It makes a compelling case that in today's crowded market, sometimes the best strategy is just escaping the crushing weight of modern cinematic canon.
Escaping the gravity well. That's a perfect way to put it. And here's where it really starts. The review states the game's greatest strength is its sheer audacity to step away from the same, you know, the same three tired narratives we see everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You get no Thanos collects the Infinity Stones, zero, Kang breaks time and we need to fix the timeline. Nothing like that. Instead, they dove into the archives.
They did. They bypassed the mainstream entirely and went straight for one of the absolute deepest, most celebrated cosmic cuts in modern Marvel history.
Right.
The legendary 2006 event, Annihilation.
Right.
For those whose knowledge of Marvel is, you know, primarily from the films, this is a completely different scale of cosmic threat and tragedy.
So talk us through that. If it's not a purple guy with a glove, what's trying to wipe out the universe this time?
So the central antagonist is Annihilus. He's the insectoid lord who rules the desolate and frankly frightening negative zone.
The negative zone. Okay.
And his motivation is beautifully simple, which is what makes him such an effective threat. There's no complex emotional baggage, no daddy issues.
Just pure conquest.
Just pure, unadulterated biological conquest. His single goal is to consume the positive matter universe. He achieves this by unleashing something called the Annihilation Wave.
Which is?
An endless, terrifying armada composed of bioships and bug soldiers. It's a pure swarm dynamic. So the scale is less about intricate schemes and more about this overwhelming existential dread.
In this setting... Moving away from Earth, that's got to be crucial for the game's atmosphere.
It's vital. It ensures that you are not saving New York City again.
Thank goodness.
Right. Marvel Cosmic Invasion immediately establishes that these stakes are cosmic, not terrestrial, by placing the action on these amazing deep cut Marvel locations. You're fighting on the Novacore homeworld of Xandar, which is now largely in ruins.
Wow.
You also battle inside this vast orbital prison called the Kiln. Basically a space maximum security facility and across the hostile, desolate surface of Arthos. This commitment to the lore just elevates the entire experience.
And the delivery matches that lore-heavy vibe. The review notes that the story unfolds through these snappy, beautifully illustrated comic panels between levels.
Yeah, they look gorgeous.
It keeps the pace fast, maintains that high-energy momentum, and it absolutely captures that perfect Saturday morning cartoon vibe, which, let's be honest, is the perfect tone for a big, chaotic, cosmic beat-em-up.
It really is.
The lore sets the stage perfectly, I get that. But, you know, cosmic stakes mean nothing if the gameplay doesn't deliver. How do they translate this immense scale and fast-paced comic action into the actual side-scrolling beat-em-up experience?
That brings us to the core mechanical innovation. Because you're right, this is a genre that can feel stale very quickly, the developers asked. How do you innovate in a genre that's been around since the 80s? And their answer is the instant tag system.
Instant tag.
Unlike older tag systems where there's like a pause or a flicker of loading, here you pick a duo, let's say Star-Lord and Rocket Raccoon, and you can switch between them instantly without missing a beat, even mid-combo.
Okay, wait, isn't that just... Isn't that just a complicated button mashing sequence that looks cool but is maybe too technical for most players? How does that really elevate the gameplay?
That's a fair question. And if it were just for show, it would hurt the game. But the review emphasizes that mastering the system is directly tied to progression, especially on harder difficulties. It doesn't just look cool. It allows for these highly satisfying, true fighting game style juggles and crowd control.
Oh, so it has a real tactical purpose.
A huge one. The review gives this fantastic example. You can launch a huge enemy into the air using the upward thrust of Star-Lord's jet boots. Then, before that enemy even starts to fall, you instantly tag in Gamora. She's positioned perfectly to use a multi-hit slicing attack, just carving the airborne enemy to pieces. Mastering that tag timing, that split-second transition, is essential.
Because the enemies get tougher.
Exactly. On higher difficulties, they'll block or interrupt slow attacks. This system rewards strategic timing, not just brute force.
That sounds like a serious skill ceiling, which is great for longevity.
So beyond the immediate tag combo action, how do you get to your super abilities? Is there like a meter you build up?
Yes, you have the cosmic meter.
Yeah.
It builds up with every successful hit, every enemy defeated, every successful tag. And when it's full, it culminates in the spectacular ultimate moves.
What stood out to me from the review, though, is that the ultimates aren't just one-note damage boosters. They have real utility, right? It forces you to think about when and why you use them.
That utility is crucial. Consider Groot's ultimate. It doesn't do massive damage, but it's invaluable for team survival. It provides full-screen crowd control, rooting all enemies in place with these huge vines.
So it gives you a breather.
It gives you a vital window to regroup, maybe revive a fallen ally, or safely set up a huge combo on a specific target. Then you contrast that with a character like Adam Warlock, whose ultimate is just a pure, focused beam of cosmic destruction.
That's your boss killer. That's your boss melter. And this strategic difference forces you to choose your two-person team based on tactical needs, crowd control and support, or just raw damage.
Speaking of characters, the roster is incredibly generous. 15 playable heroes at launch, plus 3 unlockable secrets. They didn't skimp on volume, but often in beat-em-ups, a massive roster means a lot of characters feel like clones. How do they avoid that?
They solved that exact problem by structuring the roster around 3 very defined and distinct mechanical archetypes. This makes sure that switching characters fundamentally changes your approach to combat.
Okay, so what are the roles?
First, you have the brawlers, the tanks. This group includes classic powerhouses like Hulk, Drax, and The Thing. They are intentionally slow, they have huge, punishing hitboxes, but their defining mechanic is having super armor on their heavy attacks.
What does that super armor feel like to the player? Why is that important?
It provides this immense sense of power. It means you, as the Hulk, can just ignore the small fry buzzing around you. When you wind up a heavy attack, you absorb incoming damage without your animation being interrupted. You get that satisfying, unstoppable momentum.
You can feel that already.
Plus, their special utility is they can grab 2 or 3 smaller enemies at once and use them as literal biological shields or throwable weapons. It's just pure brute force.
A giant walking shield of bad guys. I love that.
It's so good. Then you have the second group, the blasters or the zoners. This is where characters like Iron Man, Cyclops, and Star-Lord fit in. They dominate from a distance and really struggle up close.
So it's a totally different play style.
Completely. Their gameplay is so heavy on projectiles and energy glass that the review describes it as being almost like a classic shoot 'em up or shmup.
So the game basically changes genres every time you tag one of them in.
It's less about punching, more about bullet hell management.
Precisely. And finally, we have the highest skill ceiling group, the speedsters, the glass cannons.
Gamora, Spider-Man. Exactly. Gamora, Spider-Man, Nova. They are lightning fast. They focus on building high combo counts, but they are incredibly fragile. They cannot take more than a few hits. Their survival relies entirely on the skillful use of dodge canceling.
Dodge canceling, that mechanic where you interrupt your own attack animation with a quick dash.
Yeah.
That demands a lot of technical mastery.
It really does. It requires high precision, high focus. You have to prioritize movement and defense above all else, using rapid combos to apply damage and then immediately dodge out of harm's way.
And as a comic fan, I have to say, I really appreciate the little touches of fan service they included. The review highlighted a nice touch detail regarding specific character pairings.
Yes, the developers are clearly fans. Pairing certain characters like Captain America and Winter Soldier or Rocket and Groot triggers unique comic-accurate dialogue and banter. It shows they spent time injecting real personality into the game flow.
Let's pivot to presentation. We've established the gameplay is innovative, but how does it look and sound? The review describes the aesthetic as a neon-soaked synthwave feast.
And that aesthetic is a key selling point. Visually, the game embraces a modern interpretation of the 16-bit pixel art style. It's chunky, nostalgic, instantly familial. But here's the technical marvel. That pixel art is running on a thoroughly modern engine.
So it's not just a throwback, it's a blend of old and new.
Exactly. This means you get these gorgeously rendered, dynamic lighting effects that just wouldn't have been possible in the 90s. The review highlights things like Iron Man's unibeam reflecting dynamically off metallic floors, or the negative zone energy crackling with this eerie green glow that makes the cosmic backgrounds really pop.
And the audio sounds just as integral to that high tempo pace.
It truly is. The soundtrack is not just generic superhero music. It's this brilliant blend of epic orchestral Marvel themes mixed with high-tempo 80s synthwave and electronic beats. It gives you this pulsing, driving energy that perfectly matches the action.
And there's a dynamic element to it, right?
Yes, and this is so clever. When your combo counter goes above 50 hits, the music dynamically kicks in with more bass and drums, adding this intense depth to the track. It's immediate audio feedback that tells your brain you are absolutely crushing it right now, and it makes those high combo moments feel incredibly addictive.
That dynamic feedback loop, visual and audio, that must contribute so much to the feeling of momentum. Okay, now for the real test of any quality, beat 'em up. The level and boss design.
The level design keeps the 12 stages from feeling repetitive by offering just staggering environmental variety. One minute, you're battling in the swampy alien jungles of a Kree planet, and the next, you're surfing on the hull of a destroyed spaceship, dodging asteroids.
Wow.
But the bosses are highlighted as the absolute teak of the game's design. They're described not as health sponges that just soak up damage, but as intricate, layered puzzles that demand understanding and timing. You simply cannot win by button mashing.
Yeah, you have to learn the rhythm of the enemy. Give us an example of how that puzzle mechanic works.
A great example is the fight against Ronan the Accuser. Yeah. He wields the universal weapon, and beating him requires you to memorize and time your dodges to the specific rhythm of his shockwave attacks. The damage window is narrow, forcing you to focus on precise movement.
Using those dodge cancels we talked about.
Exactly, rather than just brute forcing it. The Super Scroll battle is highlighted as a true test, too. It forces you to adapt on the fly because he constantly switches between human torch mode, demanding ranged play, and thing mode, which requires heavy brawler attacks to break his super armor.
That sounds incredible. But let's be impartial. Let's look at the main piece of critical feedback. Where did the game stumble?
We have to address the main area of fatigue. Yeah. Late-game enemy variety. The critique noted that by about level 10, when your combos and character levels are peaking, you start seeing too many palette swaps.
It's the same enemy, just a different color.
Right. The same Annihilation Bug soldiers are just painted purple instead of red. And while their AI aggression might increase, their basic movesets largely stay the same. This is where the pacing dips a little. It's a creative fatigue that sets in during the game's final quarter.
Despite that flaw, it's still got a very strong 8.520.
Okay.
So that suggests the negatives are pretty minor compared to the core experience. How does co-op enhance this?
It supports up to 4 players, local or online, and is universally described as absolute chaos.
I can imagine.
With 4 ultimates firing, dozens of lasers, and huge brawlers smashing enemies, you frequently lose track of your own character. But this chaos is framed as a foundational part of the fun. It demands communication.
And what's the defining co-op mechanic? What makes it stick in your memory?
It's this incredibly tense signature mechanic they introduced, the Revive High Five. It's brilliant in its simplicity and its ability to ratchet up pressure instantly.
The Revive High Five.
If a teammate hits 0 HP, they're not out. They enter a down state. You have a critical, nerve-wracking 10-second countdown to sprint over and hit a button to initiate the high five, pulling them back into the fight with partial health.
Oh, that's genius.
It transforms what is normally a boring failure state into this immediate high-stakes, heroic party moment.
You can just hear the yells over voice chat now. I'm down! Stop fighting the boss and high-five me!
That mechanic alone sounds like it defines the shared experience. So let's look at the final assessment. 8.5 out of 10. The campaign is short, about 4 to 5 hours, but everything we've discussed points to it being engineered for deep replayability.
That's the key. That 4 to 5 hour playtime is just the initial run. The leveling system requires multiple playthroughs to unlock every character's advanced moveset. And then there's arcade mode, which introduces permadeath, a serious challenge for hardcore players.
And crucially, the review emphasizes the consumer-friendly approach. Yes, in a market flooded with microtransactions, this is a breath of fresh air. It's a complete package at launch. The review stressed that it doesn't try to sell you a battle pass or $20 skins on day one. It positions itself as a premium, polished experience that respects your time and, more importantly, your wallet.
So, to synthesize the handful of drawbacks, short campaign, visual fatigue from repetitive late-game enemies, and no cross-play support at launch, though a patch is promised for that.
Exactly. So if we synthesize all this, the primary aha moment is unmistakable. The profound success of Marvel Cosmic Invasion stems from its commitment to deep, specific lore, the Annihilation event, and its razor-sharp focus on truly innovative core mechanics like the instant tag system and that revive high five.
It succeeded precisely because it was willing to step outside of the established cinematic sandbox.
That's it in a nutshell.
Which leads to our final provocative thought for you to consider based on this deep dive. When adapting these massive multi-decade intellectual properties like Marvel, does stepping away from the most recognizable mainstream narratives, the ones everybody knows, actually grant developers the creative freedom required to make a genuinely unique and mechanically excellent product that fans didn't even know they wanted? Something for you to mull over until our next deep dive.